previously.tv podcast network.
Last time on MasterChef Junior.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fucking idiots. Fuck off.
Oh my god.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 194 for the week of March 5th, 2018. I am Upper Decker David T. Cole, and I'm here with Challenging Protein Sarah D. Bunting.
Your mom's a gooey duck.
Aggressive Spicer Tara Ariano.
Just like 10 handfuls.
And the step stool that they give to the 8-year-olds, Lindsay Weber.
Hi.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great Sick Edition. Hawaii is sick, but we are still soldiering on very bravely and welcoming a new guest, Lindsay Weber. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi. Sorry for my very anticlimactic intro. You guys have so much happening. I was like very overwhelmed. It was great.
But it was very kid-like, so I think it fit into our theme perfectly. And also,
yay! I am the 8-year-old that they give the step stool to. Literally, that is my role.
We're here to talk about MasterChef Junior. Lindsay, you chose this from a variety of premieres that were happening around this time. Why don't we start by saying, what was it about the show that made you want to come on and talk about it?
I mean, this is my favorite show, probably one of my favorite shows ever, mm-hmm. that's on air right now, I would say still. Especially reality shows. I love it so dearly, and I find it gives me such great joy on every level, and it's never bad. So it's like one of those shows that's just really reliable and never bad. So I was just excited it was coming back. I really got emotional about it.
It was a big premiere too. It was 2 hours. And they divided the kids up by sex. So we had the first hour was all girls. The second hour was all boys. I personally, well, I'll just go out on the record and say, I didn't care about the boys. Sorry. I was rooting for only the girls. All
yeah.
The boys.
Why do they split them up like that in the beginning? It's such a strange, I get it. Thematically, but it's so strange in terms of like actually a competition, you know?
Yeah. It also seemed to me like they started with way too many kids. That was my problem with this premiere. It had so many cuts. Did anyone else feel that was like too hard on the children?
Well, also it's hard to remember who's who in these shows because they're all kids and they all kind of bleed together at first. And so you really want to have people you root for, but then half the kids you never see.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, you have to remember that they're not only kids, they're next generation's super reality show soldiers. And this is their training ground. So, you know, disappointed
they
kids
know it.
Today, amazing season 87 Survivor contestants tomorrow. It was really interesting to see the girls half versus the boys half, because the boys just really made me cringe. And seeing just all the boyiness of it just really kind of... Just like,
explain what you mean by that.
You're so right.
It is a mirror to my younger self. The kids that just really needed attention. There is something about this show. The part that bothers me about MasterChef Junior is when you can tell in the editing bay, they're still editing this as sort of like the adult version. And there's moments where you can tell that the kids have been coached or are just aping what their parents have been feeding them. And it's sort of at once self-reaffirming and cringeworthy, the way the kids.
But also you need that, because imagine if it wasn't like that, how bad you would feel the whole time. You have all these like raw emotions. Like you need parents being like, good job, and say you were happy to be there. Say it was all worth it to meet the chefs. You know?
Well, but and also they're talking about like, it's been my lifelong dream to be on MasterChef Junior. Like, you are 9.
Well, it's season 6. That could be their lifelong dream. Literally.
It's true.
I love when they ask them what types of restaurants they want to open. That's my favorite. And the concepts are wild, like the hibachi for what was it? Hibachi for baking?
It was dessert, wasn't it? Yeah, cupcakes or something.
Yeah. And then one was like Big Billy's Barbecue Bakery. I was like, I love this. I love these kids.
And that Hawaiian girl who wanted a hula stage in her restaurant got eliminated. It was like, oh, mahalo.
Oh my God. It was so sad.
Okay. So, Lindsay, did you know that a certain former judge would be rejoining the proceedings before the premiere? And
I didn't know.
How did you feel about the return of us?
So he was replacing Joe was replacing what's his face, who's now back on Top Chef, the guy with the glasses who lost a lot of weight recently.
Yeah, Graham Elliott.
Thank you. And so, yeah, I was happy. I kind of forgot how great Joe is. He somehow is, he's mean, but he's mean in like this quote unquote mean way. But he's really good at being mean to children in that he's not actually mean. He's just, do you know what I mean? Like the show is all about being really good at saying that this is food is not that good to kids. Like it's really hard. And they're all so good at it somehow. And
I used to suck at it too. So I was relieved, like Tozzie, I'm never going to be with that. I just don't like her. She's just as awkward and annoying as she ever was. But Basti has really improved in his ability to talk to kids, which it's like, you have children, you have a bunch. So it's,
I just
it's
love,
high
he's
time
always
that
talking about money. He's got a great angle on it. He's the business guy. So he's,
yeah. And then he's always joking that he's going to take them to the track. He's like the Funkel.
Yes. I was about to say that he is like the, he is the uncle and he doesn't really give a shit if he warps his brother's kids a little bit. So he'll just tell it like it is or just say something blue or whatever.
Yeah, that he's like, we don't need a car seat. Fuck that. Like, all right, that's fine. But I mean, I've just, always thought just, the, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, I think he's so good in that, like this one example where the kid brought up that, was it not creme brulee, but whatever it was that was like supposed to be, it was like milky. It was like, it had fallen. It wasn't stiff enough. And he was like,
it was a flan.
Yeah. As a flan, this is bad, but as a soup, it's delicious. And I was like, that is the way to, that's the way to do it. You have to kind of like figure that, that out. And I just am very impressed with them because I would be terrible at that, I think.
Yeah, same. Also, kids are not known for having a sense of humor about themselves, especially in a situation like this. You have to find a way to split the difference and like let them laugh at the situation, which is really, I think, pretty hard to do. Like the older kids, I think it's easier, but a 9-year-old being like, it's a soup, it's great. Like occasionally they're going to be like, blink. And it's like, oh my God. That's my favorite part of the show, though, I think, is this like secret part of Gordon's brand is that he's excellent with kids and not fake or condescending at all, and was a natural from the jump. I always thought it was hilarious, especially after the excellent clip that Dave provided at the top of the show. It's like, you? Oh, of course. That makes perfect sense.
Did we think it was slightly unfair that the girls all got to cook filet mignon and the boys had to cook the notoriously difficult protein chicken?
I hate cooking chicken so much.
I didn't even think of that. That's so, I didn't even think of that, but you're so right. That sucks.
Because it's because several of them, like they cut them open and were like, well, we can't eat this. Like it was still raw on the inside. So a bunch of them didn't even get tasted because they were not cooked.
Right.
Yeah. But I feel like, and I don't remember where I read this, but apparently, and the folks on our forums are pretty knowledgeable about what's going on, like just off camera or right before filming. Like, I think they're all put through a number of like test cooks of whatever they're going to be doing so that nobody's going in there like completely cold. As it were.
I've read that too. There was a good piece by Emily Fleischiger in BuzzFeed a few years ago that she went and she saw how they did it. And, but I liked how, because they showed Gordon doing the how-to in the beginning, how to do it perfectly. It was kind of what they do in real life, which is show them how to do it perfectly and then say, okay, do it yourself now. Do you know what I mean? Right. So it felt accurate to the form. They were showing them how to do it and then said, try, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, I had no problem with that. I was annoyed that they were split up into girls and boys at all. Because that's something that Donald Trump would do on Celebrity Apprentice with grown-ups. And I like, I know these are kids and it's more like, that's more of a kidsy thing, but I still found it annoying, especially in 2018. Like, you know, the whole post-gender world that we live in starts at grade school now. Get the knack, Fox.
Why not split them up by age too? I mean, so you got a nice diverse group of kids of different ages. Cause like I'm obsessed with the 8-year-olds. They're so much littler than everyone else. Even though they're only 1 year younger than the 9-year-olds, they just feel like they're babies. Yeah. And I always want more of them and they always get kicked off so early.
There's that one older boy who was one of the first persons sent upstairs. And like, he is like just running color commentary throughout the whole rest of the thing. Like, oh, I love this guy. This guy's money or whatever he's saying.
Money. I was like, oh my God, where did you get that expression? Oh, I know where you got it. 2002.
That kid is really 26 years old. He's just like, he's like, it's a ringer.
But you're right. There was a point where all the boys who were like up for elimination were standing next to each other at the front of the stage. And like the littlest boy came up to like the elbow of the kid next to him. Like they didn't even look like they were the same species. That little kid, he's like a little bug. He was adorable.
Yeah. And there was it wasn't in this season or the last season, but I think the season before there was a quote unquote 13-year-old that I was like, nah, like that kid shaved twice today. Twice. No way.
I mean, the older kids obviously tend to do better. So we should go into it knowing that we should give the little kids like a little bit of help in terms of just getting them on the show because they're honestly so entertaining. And like, this is a TV show. So I want that kid, that little kid, I forget his name, was Tyler or something. The one that was like, could not give a crap about the show and his cooking. The one that made chicken fingers or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love him. I love him.
I also like that they tend to boot kids off in pairs. So that they're not the only one who gets kicked off, which I think is good.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do that by design.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart.
That is actually probably the only real tangible thing that a psychologist has added to a TV show. I bet. It's like, you know, you really should send them off in twos so they don't feel like they're alone in the universe. And stick that in your craw guy from Unreal.
Do we know if they're all like, if they have like a little boot camp beforehand, because the way they talk about like the lifelong friends that they've made, I'm like,
oh, totally.
It's been 18 minutes. Like, again, I know they're kids. I went to camp. I get it, but it's just funny to me. I'll never forget the people I met here. Like, sure you will. One episode of SpongeBob, you're going to forget all about Tyler.
Let's see what we're saying.
No, I bet they spend a lot of time together, right? The taping must take forever, just in general. Like, as long as they can keep them, they probably keep them there. And they probably make friends, I think. I would guess. It's weird for them to say that otherwise, you're right.
Yeah, or I guess they have to, like, be at school, like, on set. I don't know how it works for the junior version, but I'm assuming when they're not filming, the tutors are there or whatever's happening. So
I always assume they just shoot in the summer and then they are all probably put up in a hotel together. So with one parent or whatever, so that they hang out together. True.
That's a good point.
You know, an interesting thing about this show versus other cooking shows such as Top Chef is I'm always annoyed whenever I need to watch a cooking show, which I generally don't because I'm just one of those people. It's like, well, I can't taste it. I can't really judge it. You have to take so much on faith. But in this show, it's like not really about the end result of the cooking that you're coming into the show for. It's like really like, how are the kids coping with this adult situation with these adults? Kind of a neat little trick that they can play because of the contestants being kids. And it just like kind of throws that out because you're coming into it for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think people like this show because it brings back their memories of the one iconic season of Kid Nation in terms of the potential peril involved. These are real little kids using like knives and fire. One kid started a fire.
I love how Gordon's like, is anyone gonna? Camera two is just like, yep, that's a fire. All right. Gordon's like, I guess I'll do this then.
The kid was like so scared. It was so cute. They were like, good job. You did the right thing. And he like flies across the room like, with his hands over his face.
I assume that this is the same set as MasterChef. And they're just bringing in stools.
It looks the same.
Yeah, okay.
I think so they might move the cooktops down a little, but not much.
Do they? Yeah, didn't look like they made too many accommodations, except for a couple steps.
They make them look so uncomfortable when they're cooking. Even the kids who are taller, it's like everyone's elbows are just like up, and you can barely sometimes you can like barely see their faces. It looks so uncomfortable.
Not only uncomfortable, but I kept on thinking like whenever they were like sautéing stuff, it's like they must get so much splatter on their arms because they're so close to the pan because they just have to be close to the pan because they're reaching over it. Almost like these kids are literally going to be scarred for life after this show.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's why Dave loves the show.
I did enjoy it. You know, I would definitely watch this over Top Chef. So much less artifice than Top Chef that you can actually watch it and have fun, which is Top Chef is I just want to murder everybody on the show every time I watch.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go out of my way to watch this again, but it is a delight watching Gordon interact with children. Like, that is for sure the biggest draw for me.
Yeah, it really is. And I never would have thought that before the show that I was like, of all people, like who is not going to give the kids a breakdown? Graham Elliott.
Is it because he's good with kids or he puts on a show with adults?
Same difference, though.
What is the exception to his behavior? Is it being nice to kids or is it being a dick to adults when he's in front of the camera? Like, I'm sure. Well,
I guess you have to know him IRL, right?
Obviously, it would take a special kind of monster to swear and yell at a kid like he does on Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, of course. Well, don't you think when this show started, he had that reputation even more so? Now it's kind of faded. Like, wasn't it Hell's Kitchen? What was his show? Like, yeah. He still has it, right? Mm-hmm. Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I honestly don't even think of him as like the yeller, but I remember when this show first started, he was known. It was like such a shocking thing. Like, here he comes to work with kids. How will it be? Yeah. And maybe that was the gimmick at first, and now it's kind of less so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's hard to keep that going, you know, in the face of all these kids, especially when you have to send, like, imagine even if he had the resolve that I'm still going to be sort of, you know, the junior monster chef, that the first time you have to send a kid off, that is out of your system, that, you know, it kind of just breaks your heart a little bit and you have to just soften up or you will die as the host of the show.
Yeah, I also love this show as not a very good chef or cook, not a very good person in the kitchen. I like feel like it actually teaches you things and it kind of like these kids are really good and I'm like not good. So I guess we kind of like meet in the middle where I could also like ostensibly cook a chicken breast, maybe.
Yeah.
And the way that they showed you how to do it was actually like really good and seemed simple and seemed like anyone could do it. And I think a lot of the stuff they do in the show, they kind of tell you why the food is wrong, which is interesting.
Lindsay, yeah, I believe in you. Good effort. Good effort. You can make a chicken breast.
Thank you so much. I love children TV. I can't lie. I mean, I think it's hard because it's a lot of cruelty, but it's so good. Kids on TV are great. You're so right about Kid Nation also. That is my favorite show, I think.
It's everyone's favorite show. People still talk about it, and it was like 10 years ago.
It was one. We had one glorious season, and then it was too dangerous to go on. I mean, we'll never forget it. It was literally too dangerous.
They should do a reunion. I know I keep saying that every time it comes up, but
no, what they should do is a scripted show as if the kids of Kids Nation were not allowed to leave Kid Nation. And this is them now in their teens, you know, trying to survive all Blue Lagoon style.
Every like 4 years, I Google all of them and try and find them. And they occasionally pop up places and, you know, and on Reddit boards and stuff.
It's too good for this world. All right, Lindsay.
Surely.
Wait, there were 1,000 kids, so it's probably hard to say. Did you have any early favorites that you are hoping will win this season?
Okay, so I did. I really loved Benny, the girl.
Same.
Yes, me too.
So cute.
She was so cute.
She seemed very precocious, but not too precocious, and she seemed smart. And I also liked Zia. They didn't really show her that much, but she had pink hair. And I loved Maria, the one she came in, like she was chosen last. She was the Proto-Greekin, remember? She called herself. She made.
Oh, that's right. I like that too.
She made lamb chops and mofongo, which I thought looked really good. And then for the boys, you're right. I don't like the boys. I guess I liked. No. Well, Tyler, the toddler, didn't make it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. I liked the kid who made cupcakes. Kwani?
Oh, yeah. He was good.
He was cute. And I liked that he made cupcakes and they were like, oh, how dare you? And he like showed them that he ever good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's MasterChef Junior.
It is time to go around the dial. Everybody's bringing something they're watching on TV to the table. We'll start with Tara. Tara.
Atlanta is back for its long-awaited second season. Oh my God, the premiere was so good. It had so many excellent features, starting with Darius, the Lakeith Stanfield character, advancing. He was sort of, in season one, had a plot thread that he was very into conspiracy theories. And in this episode, he presented the legend of Florida Man.
Oh, so
and the
funny.
Idea is that there's one Florida man, like the Chupacabra, who does all of the crimes in Florida. And they had like a montage. It was like the Ocean's 11 montage of like past heists of casinos. But it was Florida Man doing the various things Florida Man does. So good. And also Cat Williams appears as Earn's uncle, who he's living in Paperboy's. He's renting a house from Paperboy, and Earn has to go over and make sure everything's okay because his girlfriend has called and said she's been kidnapped because he's locked her in a room. because she stole $50 from him. It's like a very kind of dirtbaggy problem. But as they're in there, someone warns, be careful. He's got an alligator in there and no one believes him. And then the cops show up and sure enough, Uncle Willie sends the alligator out ahead of him and everyone in the neighborhood knows he's got an alligator. It's impossible for me to tell you how brilliant the show is, like just describing it. But
well, I had not watched any episodes of it and I kind of walked in as Tara was watching about maybe one third in and I was just like hovering around, not leaving. And I was like, all right, I want to watch this show.
It hooks you so well, and it looks beautiful. It's like beautifully shot. The music is always really well chosen. The performances are great.
The music cue when the alligator emerges and everybody in the neighborhood is just sort of watching it saunter out and have a little lie down in the bushes as the uncle beats it out of the bag. It was really great. Yeah, it was really good.
It's such a good show. You know, it has such a great sense of place. I just loved it. I love it so much. I'm so happy it's back. So Atlanta, Thursdays at 10 on FX. If you haven't watched the first season, it's on Hulu and you should. It's great. And for my plugs, The Walking Dead is back. And so are our epic old school recaps of same. Omar is doing the first two episodes of this semi-season. And then Jeff will be back for the episode airing this Sunday. Jeff Alexander. And I also want to plug, I was on another podcast. This is slightly complicated. There's a podcast called This Week in Atrocity, which is hosted by Jeb Lund, aka Mobute from Twitter. And they also have, for their Patreon subscribers, a spinoff called Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, where Dave Roth from Deadspin and Jeb, do a deep dive on a Hallmark Christmas movie. And so I obviously picked one that starred James Vanderbeek. It's called Mrs. Miracle. So if you go to look up This Week in Atrocity on Patreon, throw them a dollar, you can listen to this podcast. And I hope that you do, because I actually had to watch this stupid thing twice. It was so boring. But the discussion about it was really fun. And This Week in Atrocity is a great podcast. And so is the spinoff. So you should listen to both.
Lindsay, your turn.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that Hallmark movie. Like 99%.
You probably have. It's from 2008 and Doris Roberts is also in it.
Oh, I saw. Yeah, I did. It was good. I liked it a lot. So my pick for TV is the always good, never bad Vanderpump Rules. It is back. There are maybe 35,000 episodes this season, and honestly, I could watch it all year round. If it was year round, I'd watch it. It is such a good show, and it just keeps getting better this season. There's a really great plot line where this woman named Sheena, who's like probably one of the most irritating people alive, but she recently got a divorce from her drug addict ex-husband and now has a new boyfriend who is this amazing who named Rob Valletta. It's Amber Valletta's brother. And when the show premiered, they came out with this Instagram together where he was like, we broke up, but we like support each other or whatever. And you're like, oh my God. And the entire season is about how in love he is with her, she keeps saying, and how he's the best boyfriend she's ever had and how they already picked out the name of their kids. And you're watching this knowing they're already broken up. And it's just, there's so much, it's so many levels of cringe. And I just love this show so much. So good.
Love it.
You know. And my plug, I guess, relevant to you guys, I am recapping the new Unreal season on Vulture, which is fun because I recapped the first season, which was great, and then skipped the second, which was terrible. So it's been fun to come back and fully immerse myself into it with hopes that it'll be better. They replace a showrunner and it's already kind of a little bit better. And I think that they're way more equipped to talk about stuff with gender than they were for the stuff they talked about last season. And then my other plug is I have a podcast called Who Weekly that is my other podcast. So if you don't listen to it, it's free. So go check it out.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Drunk History has been brilliant all season, as it always is. I always love Drunk History, but the most recent episode was goddamned brilliant. It is called Drunk Mystery, and it is based on unsolved mysteries. The first segment, Agatha Christie disappears to like Blair Witch, her new book. Amazing casting in this one. Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons are in it together. The storyteller not knowing who Dorothy Sayers is kind of a shame, for her. Kids, check your parents' bookshelves. Dorothy Sayers is the shit. The last segment is my favorite murders, Georgia Hardstark, talking about the Circleville letters. And at one point, Derek Waters, as Robert Stack, emerges from an Unsolved Mysteries van, reads in the same purple light as the credits. And I laughed for 10 minutes, and apparently I'm not going to stop laughing at that. But of course, the real story is the middle segment, the D.B. Cooper segment.
Yeah, they did. Yes. Think back to the old school, because I'm an old fool. Who sold who? If you want to get down, I'm going to show you the way. Coop. There it is. Let me hear you say Coop. There he is. Coop. There he is. Coop. There he is.
It's been a while.
It has been. Oh, never go away. Coop, there he is. And also in an amazing bit of deep cut casting, at least for this nerd who has seen The Fugitive about 200,000 times, Richard Reilly plays the lead agent on the case, Ralph Himmelsbach. You probably don't recognize the name, but he's a total, hey, it's that cop. He's probably best known as the care to change your bullshit story, sir, storyteller prison guard from the beginning of The Fugitive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, wow. you know the guy.
Deep cut.
Yeah, very, very deep. And possibly unintentional, but I still enjoyed it. Drunk History has been firing on all cylinders this year. I always worry that it's going to run out of steam at some point and have to like do some little like bullshitty stories that aren't going to be good, and it's just going to run out of gas, but it hasn't so far. Tara, have you been watching this season?
Yeah, they've really had a lot of great new storytellers this season. I think that helps.
I thought of you watching the season premiere with Tiffany Haddish and her coloring books.
She was great.
That was 100 for you.
Yeah,
that one also had Busy Phillips as a World War II spy, basically. So yeah, definitely check out Drunk History if you're not into it already. I let them stack up on the DVR and then use them as treats for like chunks of unpleasant tasks like filing that I get through. So yeah, that's where I'm at with that. Thank you so much, Drunk History. You're the best. My plug is for The Blotter Presents, our true crime podcast. This week's guest is Toby Ball. We are talking about Unsolved, the USA series about Tupac and Biggie. It's pretty good. We liked it. Next week, we're doing sort of a book club type of thing. My guest is Mike Dunn, and we are discussing The Golden State Killer, which Investigation Discovery did a limited series on this week. But we'll also be discussing Michelle McNamara's book, which finally came out. She was the one who, that's Patton Oswalt's first late wife, who, not his first one who died, you know what I mean, was not able to finish her book about the killer before passing away unexpectedly. The book was finished and came out. It's good so far, and we're hoping that a bunch of you guys will read along with us and then let us know what you think.
Lindsay, are you familiar with Nightman?
From It's Always Sunny?
No. Oh, no.
This is
excellent guess.
Let's let Nightman give you the gist of Nightman through this previously on.
Oh, no.
Johnny Domino was one of San Francisco's hottest young jazz musicians. Every night, he turned up the heat at the House of Soul. But fate and a cosmic event were about to change his life forever.
So, Lindsay, Nightman is a comic book that was turned into a TV series in the 90s about a San Francisco saxophonist who was hit by cosmic lightning, paired up with military weapon-grade technology and suits and gadgets to become Nightman, who kind of looks like Batman if he had a lozenge for an eye.
You know, I got that from the preview, actually. Yeah. It's a pretty good preview. I was like, oh, so he's a jazz man who becomes a superhero. That sounds great.
I know you're wondering, why hasn't he been integrated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And I think we're all wondering that, frankly.
At the end of the first half of the pilot, the cliffhanger is Nightman, who is not quite yet Nightman. He's still known as Johnny Domino. And they're trying to escape, and they run out of anti-gravity juice or whatever is on his suit, and they fall into the San Francisco Bay. And this is like a big cliffhanger. And then the second half of the pilot opens. They do not acknowledge that at all. He is on dry land and he's talking to that guy from the Avengers again.
When you say that guy from the Avengers, you mean the Avengers TV show, not the Avengers from
Oh my goodness, no. Nobody from the Avengers can.
No,
the old guy from the from the Avengers, who now explains to Johnny Domino where Johnny Domino is, re his superpowers.
It's quite possible that your perceptual skills have leapt ahead hundreds of generations into the future.
Meaning what?
That your brain has developed the capacity to perceive and process thought patterns, much as a radio receives frequencies of sound.
Uh-huh. Except what I'm hearing is all bad.
Yes, Johnny, exactly. You're in tune to the frequency of evil.
Sure.
Evil plays a Casio. Good to know.
So the Chinese delegation from the Coalition of Evil Investors pitches this very overly complicated plan to kill Johnny Domino. Let's hear that plan.
A tarantula is not real, but the venom is. When Mr. Domino returned to his normal place of dwelling, a small motion detector will trigger our little friend to welcome Mr. Domino home.
We don't want Mr. Domino dead.
Yes, that was the voice of Mr. Healy at the end there from Orange is the New Black. So the new plan is to kidnap Carla Day. And Carla Day is played by Taylor Dane, as you remember from the first half.
Oh, sure. Of course.
So they grab her. And now Johnny has to play hooky from his House of Soul gig. So he pulls out the suit's hologram projector that now projects a hologram of him playing smooth saxophone jazz on the stage. So he can escape and save her. And when he suits up, you know, in anime, how they have that, like, you know, when the robots form the big robot, or Sailor Moon goes from schoolgirl to Sailor Moon. They have that big sequence that they reuse time after time where they do the transformation. They call out all the things that are changing. This show has one of those and they do it twice in this episode and they use the same footage.
Wow.
Yep. So skipping ahead a little bit, everyone is trying to get this weapons cache. Nightman finds the sexy villain lady who, out of nowhere and without context, sicks David Hasselhoff on Nightman, who kills him in 10 seconds by throwing him off a cliff.
On the other hand, I really do like that cape.
Nice to hassle, isn't it?
Boo. All right, so sexy lady escapes, but Nightman catches up with the Chinese group, dispatching two bodyguards with one of the new weapons. And then he delivers this line.
With three, you get soup. Care to go for it?
No.
No.
So the day is saved, but not from racism. Back at Domino HQ, Johnny is pouring champagne for him and Carla Day, who he thinks is waiting for him in the next room. But surprise, surprise, is actually sexy villain lady who's out for revenge after Nightman screwed up all her plans. But as he's walking in, he gets a sense of evil. And just then, the robot spider, who we all forgot about, jumps out of the box and kills sexy villain lady. Then Carla Day, played by Taylor Dane, walks in, and this is how the episode ends.
My last night in town, and I'm not going to let a thing get in between us. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you had company.
She's not company. She's dead.
Yay!
Wow. Holy moly.
Oh, I can't wait to use that line with zero context in the future.
That music means it is time for the canon. This week, we have a user submission from Lauren. Lauren, take it away.
Hi, Tara, Dave, Sarah, and special guest. Today, I'm submitting an episode to the extra hot great canon of one of my favorite TV shows, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I don't think I need to tell you that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is great, but it's a difficult show to pick out one standout episode. Any would need to be judged on not only its plot, but on the songs as well. After some deliberation, I decided to start at the very beginning with Season 1, Episode 1, Josh Just Happens to Live Here. This episode is a cocksure thesis on the show's point of view and characters. It shows its ability and desire to tackle dark issues like depression with humor, non-judgmentalness, and care, and non-vanity on Rachel Bloom's part. And it is really funny with some great songs. The episode opens in 2005 at a summer camp musical performance. We are introduced to a teenage Rebecca Bunch, who is a very enthusiastic background singer. We pivot to her walking with her less enthusiastic bro boyfriend, Josh Chan, where she promptly gets dumped in a very high school summer camp way.
I just think that we're just really different, you know? Like you're like really dramatic and like weird. I don't know. I think maybe we should take a break.
No, but what? But I love you.
And thanks for that. I mean it.
Come on, Josh.
Bye, Rebecca. I'll see you around.
No, but... No. What? No, I'm not dramatic. I'm not dramatic. Oh, my God! Shut up, you stupid bitch!
We flash to present day to an obviously depressed Rebecca listening to an overwhelming voicemail from her mother, the amazing Tova Felcha, bringing us up to speed on where she is now. An unhappy but successful lawyer in New York. At work, Rebecca learns that she's about to be promoted to partner and proceeds to freak out. She runs outside to take an alarming amount of anti-anxiety pills and assures herself this is what happy feels like.
What a weird ad campaign.
Her prayers for help are answered by the appearance of
Josh Chan,
who just happens to be walking by. Rebecca waves him down and reunites with Josh for the first time since the opening scene. Rebecca pretty successfully plays it cool and learns that Josh is moving from New York back to California, West Covina to be precise. Josh flirts with her a little and is a ray of light to Rebecca in her state of mind.
Actually, I'm moving.
Oh, moving.
Yeah. I had been trying to make it work here in the Big Apple, and one day I realized I get stuck in a rat race. I mean, what's the point, right? And it's so awesome back home. It's so chill, it's relaxed. Out there, everyone is, you know, like, I don't know. It's like they're happy.
Where are you from again?
West Covina, California, 91791.
And with that, Rebecca is changed. She pretty quickly quits her job and moves to the technicolor of, to her, Oz-esque West Covina with the help of the show's first official song. This song is so great. The juxtaposition between Rebecca's manic hopefulness against the mediocre-ness of West Covina as a town, 2 hours from the beach, four in traffic, are really funny and show a real affection for the town and for what Rebecca's going through.
Good morning, sir. See the sparkle of the concrete ground. Hear the whoosh of the bustling town. What a feeling of love in my gut. I'm falling faster than the middle school's music program was cut. People dine at Shea Applebee's. And the sky seems to smile at me. It's all new, but I have no fear.
Accidentes.
And also by coincidence, Josh just happens to be here.
Rebecca cheerfully dumps her antidepressants down the drain in her new apartment, and her mother leaves another voicemail distressed by her move and letting the audience in on a college suicide attempt. Rebecca sends an easy breezy text to Josh, and we watch her fret as she doesn't receive a response. We then move to the Whitefeather & Associates law firm where Rebecca will work. There we meet Daryl Whitefeather, her boss and 1/8 Chippewa, and Paula, the firm's senior paralegal and my spirit animal, who is immediately suspicious of why this Ivy-educated New York lawyer has shown up in her office. The writing of Daryl and Paula in these opening scenes are so economical and funny. We know exactly who they are very quickly, and Daryl is endearing even with some poorly thought-out comments about his divorce and Jew lawyers. Thanks to a Facebook check-in by Josh, Rebecca finds her way to the bar home base. Rebecca just missed Josh, and we get another great introduction to a character, Paula's favorite porn category, Greg. From the beginning, Rebecca and Greg have great chemistry. His self-aware wryness and her disinterest create a unique and fun dynamic. Greg invites Rebecca to a party the next night where Josh will supposedly be.
Do you want to go?
Yeah, is there like a paperless post that I should reply to?
Why don't we just go together?
Great, yeah. Okay, so you'll come to me in a car?
Yes, like a date, because you're pretty and you're smart and you're ignoring me, so you're obviously my type.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Perfect.
Some more business with Paula being awesomely suspicious of Rebecca and Rebecca being seemingly effortlessly competent at her job. And we're into the sexy getting ready song, a song I know I personally play in my head and sometimes in real life when I'm getting ready for a fancy nighttime activity. Disconnect between the lyrics and tone of the song and with the disturbing visuals of what a woman goes through to get ready is a really funny feminist commentary.
A first time make everything shiny and smooth.
Oh yeah,
because I want my birthday to be so soft for you. I'm gonna make this night one you'll never forget. Cause boy, I know you like an hourglass silhouette. Let's see how the guys get ready. It's the sexy getting ready song. The sexy getting ready song. Fluffing and flouncing, giggling and laying. Sexy getting ready song.
Greg picks up a smoking hot, but refreshingly not TV skinny, Rebecca for the party. Rebecca, of course, can't help herself in constantly talking about Josh, and Greg notices. Rebecca solves the issue of Greg's suspicion by half-heartedly but insistently making out with him all over the party, bringing him into a bedroom to look for Josh. Greg is reasonably weirded out by all of this, but Rebecca is insistent until she learns that Josh is both not coming to the party and moved back from New York to be with his girlfriend, and she starts to break down. Rebecca and Greg's joint humiliation complete, Greg goes to take her home. But Paula shows up, having used her internet stalking skills to find out where Rebecca is going to be. Paula confronts Rebecca about her lies and her obvious Josh obsession, and in any other show, the two would become enemies. But it takes a turn. Rebecca starts to melt down and berate herself, and Paula reacts with unexpected support and love.
Stop it!
Don't you talk about my friend like that ever again. Do you hear me?
We're friends.
I would be proud to be your friend.
I love this unexpected moment. This is not a show that's going to pit strong women against each other, minus some Valencia business that is eventually turned around, but put them together for an awesome, if codependent, power friendship. Paul is on Team Rebecca, and in this moment, there's nothing the two can't do together. And then Rebecca receives a text back from Josh with an invitation to dinner, and Rebecca and Paula reprise West Covina in a beautiful harmony.
See the blood rushing to my cheeks. Hear the sigh when I try to speak. All our cares will disappear. West Covina. Yes, also by coincidence, so random, just by chance. Who'd have thunk it so remarkable and weird, right? It's so great that this guy, Josh, just happens to be.
You want to go drive by his house?
You know where he lives?
That song gives me the chills every time. This episode is a deft, fun, and heartwarming first episode of a show that only builds off from there. There are a few other shows that I think that get to the heart of anxiety and depression and the struggles that a lot of people face every day, and this show bravely is not afraid to go there. I urge you to add it to the canon as the first of what I'm sure will be more canonical episodes of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Thanks.
Lindsay picked this off our list. So Lindsay, why don't you go first? What do you think of this presentation?
I mean, I guess I was biased when I picked it, so I'm definitely going to agree. I mean, is it worthy? Yeah, it's like an amazing show. I like that she picked the pilot because I feel like a pilot for this type of show is really difficult because it broke every rule when it first started and kind of came off unlikable from the start in terms of like, if you said to me, oh, it's a show about like, you know, like a sad single girl, but it's also a musical. I'd be like, no, sorry, not for me. Like, not my type. Nope, sorry. You know, but it's one of those things where if the songs were slightly bad, it would be a terrible show. And she is like beyond all odds makes it fantastic. And it's still a really good show, which is like also shocking to me is that they're able to pull this out every week and every season. So I'm down. I agree.
I'll go next. Thank you, Lauren, for this presentation. So good. I was amazed watching it again for the purpose of the podcast. As you say, at how assured it is and how much it seeds future episodes right from the start. I mean, it knows what it is so much. And the evolution of the Paula Rebecca relationship, even just over the course of this hour of TV, is handled so well. I love the two of them. Their friendship is wonderful. And I agree with her that the harmony at the end of the West Covina reprise is just beautiful. They both are such good singers. Like the music is clearly key. And Sexy Getting Ready song obviously is an all timer. The coda at the end of the rapper, whoever he is, leaving voicemail apologies for all the women he's mistreated who have danced in his videos is very funny. And putting the dancers in Spanx and putting like mustache bleach on them and stuff is just, it's all really, really funny.
And then they have to stop the song and help her with her Spanx.
Yes. Like,
that's so good.
Yeah. And I miss Greg. I really miss Greg a lot. This episode reminded me just how much I really do miss him. So, yeah, I previously had tried to make a pitch for season one, episode four, a couple of months ago that was not successful. But I hope this one does get through because it's an amazingly good pilot for a show that could go wrong, as Lindsay says, in like 500 different ways. Mm-hmm. And it somehow doesn't. And it's amazing.
I mean, the title was trying to warn you off, right? I mean, that title is poison, right? Yeah.
Just everything about it. I feel like it could have gone through one round of edits from someone, from some studio, from some producer, and it could have been ruined completely. Mm-hmm. But somehow, like, even though it was her first show, she knew what it had to be, and it had to be a certain amount of funny to avoid people saying, oh, this is insane, not for me. So I like applaud her on every level.
Agree. Sarah.
Yeah, it really is a difficult balance. Not just because it's a musical, which would usually be Buncey Kryptonite. Although I think I did vote for
you did.
Your submission.
You were the only one.
I know. What? Blue is green. But I also like the balance of this character, which is established immediately. Like so often on TV and in the movies, you have a character who, like, if she has some struggles with mental illness, it immediately goes to this like Drew Barrymore and Mad Love place. Or she's like single and daffy, but it's always like one and a half notes. And this is like her first conversation with Josh, like you can see that she's a little awkward and sort of struggling to integrate everything that's happening in her life, but it's not taken to this degree. It's not taken to this level that's like unrealistic to just being an awkward person who can also be extremely competent in her job in certain areas of her life, like that those things can exist and that they can put that forward in this pilot, that it's like, okay, well, there's a meltdown happening, but she's still about to make partner, like that these two things can go together. Also, she's a great singer. And it's not TV thin, which I also appreciate. This is a extremely confident pilot, but isn't annoying about it. Paula's the shit. The songs are the shit. They get stuck in my head. The fact that she says the words "be emoticon," obviously, be whistle for Sarah. This was really delightful. But I think my favorite, my favorite part of it is that they have this dimensioned person who, you know, is not perfect, but her imperfections are not cartoonish. And one of these days, I'm going to get around to catching up on this show and as always, I'm excited to do that when we get a canon submission, because it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Here I am starting with this show, and I'm excited to watch more, which is a hallmark of a successful canon entry. And Lauren, thank you very much for the submission. Dave.
It was interesting to watch this pilot to see like some of the changes that grew out of the rest of the season. When we hit the West Covina song, it kind of hits Ally McBeal territory with their little embellishments to the scene, the little singing baby, the Accidente guy, but they dial back moving forward. And I think that was the right call. It's a little goofy. This is very strong. I don't think they, not to say that they peaked, but they just never really topped Sexy Getting Ready song, I think, on this show. I think that they started out of the gate super strong with that.
Oh, really? It's a great song, but I think there have been a lot of great songs on the show.
Oh, I didn't say they were terrible. I just think this is probably the best one. And fair. You know, when you have a pilot, you know, you've had your whole life to do that first thing. You know, it's like your band's first album.
Oh, yeah. Or like season one of Veronica Mars, that it's like he'd been spit shining this for years. Yeah. And then
it's like the business time in the pilot of Flight of the Conchords. It's another one where it's like a series defining song.
The Paula dynamic between her and Paula is amazing. It's one of TV's great kind of friendships, to see that kind of grow. Although I will say they flip-flopped so many times in the last season with Paula getting fed up with, you know, her shit and her lies, that I felt like maybe they could have done one less of those. A couple other things that felt a little out of place. The whole Jew lawyer thing from White Feather seemed like now looking back, out of character. Like, he's such a lovable
guy. That's not the kind of humor that lasted on this show, I would say.
Yeah. That seemed like that was a pilot note moving forward. Let's not do that. So that did take me out a little bit. But, you know, the strength of this pilot is, as Lindsay said, that all these impossible elements came together and created something really fun and unique in a situation where it could have been a car wreck in an instant. They tweaked the formula moving forward a little bit and grew the characters as the series goes along, but they came out of the gate really strong and really confident. And the Sexy Getting Ready song, I think, is emblematic of everything that is right when they started this series and, you know, succeeding, you know, against impossible odds. So yeah, I really enjoyed it too. So shall we put this to a vote?
Sure.
Indeed. All right. Lindsay Weber, officially, what say you?
Sure. Yes. Is that how you vote? Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Tara Ariana.
I vote yay as well.
Sarah D. Bunting.
It's a yes from me. Thanks, Lauren.
I will say yes as well. Thank you very much. That means Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Season 1, Episode 1, Josh Just Happens to Live Here. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Akre Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Who has their winner?
Me. It's Gina Rodriguez. In addition to getting cast in a Netflix movie called Someone Great from Jennifer Caton Robinson, who previously created Sweet Vicious for MTV, Gina Rodriguez has also been reportedly cast as the first female love interest for Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Woo! Can't wait to see that. I love the two of them separately. I think the two of them together will be super funny and great. And I love that show. Can't wait for it to come back. Hooray for Gina Rodriguez of Jane the Virgin. She deserves all of her success and more.
And loser of the week?
That's from me, and my losers are former ratings juggernauts, including the Oscars, which met or matched last year's low for whatever reason. I think people sort of para-watch on Twitter if they don't care, instead of watching if they don't care, for whatever reason, low ratings for that. And The Walking Dead has posted its crappiest numbers since season one in its recent return to the airwaves. Not Oof. Great. Bobs. Mm.
Speaking of not great, you know what time it is?
great time?
It's game time. Hello, everybody. This is the fifth game time of the season. Very exciting season. Value guests have won all the games so far. It is 4-0. And Lindsay,
Un- unprecedented. No pressure, Lindsay.
No pressure, Lindsay. No. But a win today would win the season.
What?
Not okay. only the first valued guest victory in Extra Hot Great History, but also could be a sweep. Yep. Totally humiliating Tara and Sarah.
So wow. true.
No pressure. Okay.
Sarah's used to that, but good luck to you.
Today we are playing Sound Foundations from yours truly with the considerable help
Uh-oh.
From the good game-minded people of at EHG Assist. In Solid Foundations, I will read you the hint, and the answer is a sound you have to make.
Oh, what? Oh.
There are only 21 questions today.
Okay.
And in the event of a tie, this is very important. In the event of a tie, the winner will be decided by the quality, the passion, and the je ne sais quoi they put into their previous answers.
Oh, no. The charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent of our previous performances.
Got it.
Tara, can you please explain the steel meal situation and for Lindsay what those are?
Yes, of course. Okay, so Lindsay, the valued guests have previously, actually they have none, so this doesn't apply to you, but Sarah has two steel meals, I have three. So if either of us can jump in after someone else misses a question and steal the points or try to.
Yes. There is one score break in the middle of the game, and the person who is in last place at that time will have a chance to win some bonus points. So keep that in mind. Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. So our order today is going to be Tara, Sarah, then Lindsay. Are we ready to play Sound Foundations?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I guess. Sound effect.
Tara.
Good luck, everybody.
So, no one told you life was going to be this way.
Oh. Hey.
Correct.
For one point?
1 point.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting. Michael, after that turbo jump, I was just going to listen to the sound of myself idly thinking.
I'm not sure how to make this sound, but woo woo.
One more, please.
I don't know. What?
One more time,
one
please.
One more? I hate it. Woo woo.
Correct. That is Kit from Knight Rider.
Thank you for not buzzing.
Oh, no.
All right, Lindsay. You don't know the value of household goods, and you just lost the shell game.
I don't know what that is. I'm not going to be good at
you
this game.
Just, you don't know the value of household goods, and you just lost Plinko.
Oh, God. I don't... I know the price is right, but I don't know the sound. This is not going to be a good game for me. I have a terrible memory. I don't know.
Steel meal?
Steel meal!
Oh, let Sarah me. Got it first.
Sarah beat me. Go ahead, Sarah.
Wah, 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 wah.
Nice.
Correct. Tara.
Yeah.
How many points do I get for that?
One. One.
Just one?
One right. point.
590 West 16th Street, Stephen Foster High School.
Oh, I don't know what that is. I assume it's Fame, but I don't know what the sound is. I don't know. I don't know.
Steel meal.
Oh!
Yep.
Chung Chung.
Ah!
No.
Tara.
That's funny.
You're sick, girl.
All right, you're out of steel meals, but good job.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, now it is your regular question. America first heard this sound on TV in the Bunker Residence.
First heard this sound on TV?
First heard this sound residence. Presented on television in the Bunker Residence.
Oh, God. In the Bunker Residence?
Yes.
Well, I'm just going to have to guess that it is...
Steel meal.
Steel meal.
Is it... That's toilet flush.
It was. Toilet flush. All right, nice. Lindsay, here's your second question.
I have no idea what anything is. Yeah.
It's a shame a woman of your high rank has to walk this city naked.
I honestly don't. Can you just give me the Friends ones, please? Or something that I've seen. I don't know what that is.
That is no ding, idea. Ding, shame. Ding, ding, shame.
Oh, Game of Thrones.
Oh, I don't watch that.
Tara Ariano.
Yes, sir.
The teacher has something to say to the Brown family child.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Correct. Charlie Brown's special teachers. Sarah D. Bunting.
I knew that.
The sound of being better, stronger, faster.
Better, stronger, faster? I'm not sure this is going to be right, but...
What?
Yeah, also would have accepted...
That was a $6 million man, Lindsay.
$6 million man, correct. All right, Lindsay.
You guys are like...
Here, all right. We're all sending you good vibes. Oh, them dukes! I just built that seemingly useless dirt ramp.
What the fuck are these shows?
Lindsay is a tiny baby, you guys.
I know.
What year are you watching TV in? I have no idea.
All of them.
Yeah, I don't know what that sound is. Of course.
That's Dukes of Hazzard. That's the Charlie.
I would have gotten that wrong.
All these stories and Andy Rooney tonight on... This is Tara.
Tick, 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 tick.
60 minutes, correct. Sarah D. Bunting. I'm Captain Pike, and I approve this message. I'm Captain Pike, and I approve this message.
I don't know. I only know the theme.
Beep.
I'm not confident about what the sound is, so I will not steal meal. Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's when he's in that black box with a red light, and all he can communicate with is beeps because he's all burned up and gross.
That's from Star Trek, the original series.
All right, Lindsay, this is your question, and after this, we'll go into a score break. You're a young ensign, a go-getter, and you're really opening doors in Starfleet.
Is this Star Trek related?
Yes. I mean,
yes, there's. I don't know this at all.
Opening doors in Starfleet.
Is it the noise? I don't know. I don't know.
That is. That's doors opening and closing. All right, let's hear the scores, please. Tara, Arianna.
Very suspenseful game. Sarah and I are tied with 4 points each. Lindsay is looking to get on the board.
All right, Lindsay, here is your chance. You're going into the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Here's how it works. Boy, if you thought these questions were old and difficult, just you wait. All right, Lindsay, this is how it works. I am holding in my hand a card from the mid-90s Trivial Pursuit TV set. I'm going to read you all six questions. If you can get half of them right, you get double points. So you'll get 2 points.
Okay.
I'll let you know the category. I'll read you the questions. Answer if you can. Here we go.
Good luck.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Classics. So it's going to be old shows, even older than the 90s.
Oh, great.
What was the first network to offer coast-to-coast programming in 1951? What network? You had decent odds here.
NBC.
NBC, you are correct.
Hey!
All right. The category is sitcoms. Mm. What six kids was housekeeper Alice Nelson obliged to clean up after?
Okay, Brady Bunch, that one I do know.
Woo!
All right. One more out of these last four questions and you get 2 points. Next category is drama. What David Jansen character was the only private eye to go assignment to go to assignments on a bus?
David Jansen. Yeah,
I never heard of this, so
I don't know David Jansen character.
That's Harry O. Harry O.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, sure. What?
Kids and Games is your next category.
Okay.
What 1957 Roger Moore series was based on Sir Walter Scott characters?
What the hell?
Yeah.
That sounds really fun for kids, by the way. You know what kids love? Roger Moore.
You know what kids love? I can assume you don't know this because nobody would.
I don't know.
You know what kids love? Ivanhoe.
What?
Oh, for Jesus God's Christ. Sake.
All right. You got two left. Two left, Lindsay. Here we go.
Okay.
What Highway Patrol star explained his success as the guys with the ugly mugs are working. Man, you really started off strong, and then these questions got real terrible.
I wish this was also the Brady Bunch, but I have a feeling it's not.
This is Broderick Crawford. Do you remember him? All right. In all seriousness, you have a really good chance of getting this last question. This is the wild card category, and here it is. What word begins all these series titles ending in squad, story, surgeon, and woman? What's the word before all those that start all those titles? Something squad, something story.
Wonder?
Something surgeon and something
bionic,
woman.
Not surgeon. Bionic? No.
I need your final answer. Something squad, something story, something surgeon, something woman.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Take a guess. It's generic.
Super?
That was police. Police squad, police story, police woman. Mm-hmm. Almost got there, but not quite. All right, back to the game.
This is why our games have multiple choice, gotta say. So happy about that.
We're cruel, cruel mistresses here on Extra Hot Great Game Time. Tara Ariano, Phyllis Diller thinks you're not talented.
That was a guess.
Gong.
Oh, sure.
Sarah D. Bunting. Another Mary Tyler Moore produced piece of television is now over.
Meow.
That was adorable.
Lindsay, Hector Salamanca's last four words. Hector Salamanca's last four words. I'm going to give you a clue, okay?
Yeah.
That's your clue.
That's my clue?
Yes.
Is this
Hector
from
Salamanca's
show?
Last four words.
I don't even know who that is. Is that, this from, no, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not thinking.
Anybody?
Steel Meal. Yeah, Steel Meal. Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Oh, that's literally it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the guy from Breaking Bad. It can only communicate. Versus
that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Tari Ariano.
Yeah.
The name's Prep Course, Doug Prep Course. Correct. That's the coffee slurp from Clone High. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Or Sarah D. Bunting. The world is exactly 1 hour closer to being destroyed by terrorists.
Boop. Beep. Boop. Beep.
That was gorgeous.
Correct. All right, Lindsay. Showing true leadership, you're in the middle of saving the royal princess by completing the demands of the swine who kidnapped her.
Is this... is this from a show?
Yes.
Is this a TV show thing?
It's from
are you sure?
Yep,
warmer.
If you have seen this show, this episode, you will have remembered it.
Then let's just say I have not, probably.
I don't think I know that either.
All right.
Steel Meal?
Do you have some left? Yeah?
I have. This is my last one.
All right, Steel Meal, let me read that question again. Showing true leadership, you're in the middle of saving the royal princess by completing the demands of the swine who kidnapped her.
Is it...
Correct.
Yeah.
That is the Prime Minister of the UK fucking a pig
to save
on Black Mirror.
The Royal Princess on Black Mirror. All right,
now everyone is out of Steel Meals.
Everybody's last question coming up. This is question 19. Sorry, Ariana.
I'm exhausted.
Yes.
We make this noise between doing things by your command.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
It's very similar to Knight Rider's sound, and that is okay. That Cylon's from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same sound effects, sped up or slowed down or something like that. Okay. Sarah D. Bunting, when you are altogether ooky, you let your fingers do the talking.
Oh.
Snap, snap. Correct. The Addams Family. All right. Last question of the game. Lindsay.
I'm going to give you
5 points if you get this right. Oh, Miss Fortune. You are bankrupt.
Oh, it's like, is it the...
Come on, make the noise.
I don't... Is this from Jeopardy or from Wheel of Fortune?
Oh, Miss Fortune. You are bankrupt.
Oh, I don't know that... What's the... It's like... I don't know the sound.
Can I give
this
a guess?
Like the worst.
You just went. You just lost all your money.
I don't care.
You don't care.
I don't know.
It's a slide whistle and a guy going at the same time. So,
really?
All right, scores, please, Tara.
Oh God.
Fucking hell, we're tied, 7 each.
All right, so let me go back and review the answers that you guys gave. This is a Tara, Sarah, tie. Clap, 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 clap was okay. The wub was pretty great. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was good.
I did it twice, too.
Sarah got the chung chung. We got the wah wah. That was pretty good. Sarah struggled through.
I did.
Gong Meow was great. Yeah, you know what? Sarah did bump.
For sure.
Got this one.
No question.
Yeah, no question. So that means...
Meow.
Sarah.
Good job.
It's been a while. It's been like 2 seasons. Hey, buddy.
All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We kept the oven on at 250 for MasterChef Junior before going around the dial with stops at Atlanta, Drunk History, Vanderpump Rules, and Nightman. Lauren wasn't crazy for nominating the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend pilot for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sarah, making them noises, was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Julia Robert and Richard Gere,
Sarah D. Bunting,
boop, beep, boop, beep,
and Lindsay Weber.
Sorry I got every single question wrong on the quiz.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Not Great. Fluffing and flouncing, giggling and ladying,
sexy and hop on my dick with that tight little dress then. Turn that ass around like you're trying to impress then. God, what? This is how you get ready? This is horrifying, like a scary movie or something, like some nasty ass patriarchal bullshit. You know what? I gotta go apologize to some bitches. I'm forever changed after what I just seen.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.